Dino.
Yes!
A little bit of movie news.
Rumblings. That's awesome!
Rumblings roundup for you, Jam out there. It's Oscar nominations time. A little late this year. Normally, we would have already done this, guys. We would have already rants and raved our way through the Oscars, but they're pushing us into 2021. We've moved past it. We're talking 2021 movies. Our buddy Ariel joined us for Ryan the Last Dragon talk this week, so be sure and check that out if you've seen the movie or are going to. But yeah, definitely late and not without the controversy, guys. Every year, somebody is uproarious, yelling about something. I think maybe this year, a little bit less than other years. I saw some, I guess, discussion in the Discord early this morning about this, which broke the news for me. I forgot the Oscar announcements were today until I got on our Discord and saw that. If you want to join that, it's madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. But yeah. Our VIPs were talking about the nominations, and so we'll go through them here. We'll give some takes, some opinions, and we'll end the episode with a recommend for you for sticking through. How about that?
Why don't they do this as a primetime event?
That's a good point. Wow.
They do this at like 5 o'clock in the morning. Why? That doesn't make any sense to me. I don't get it.
That's an excellent point. I've never thought about it until you just said that. They could make money off that easily. I don't know.
I mean, it's not going to be like the highest rated show of the year or anything, but on like a Sunday night at 7 o'clock or something, I don't know.
It has to be 7 a.m. East Coast time or whatever.
Yes,
really dumb. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Selection Sunday model.
Yeah.
Seriously. Get Seth Greenberg up there.
Right. Yeah.
Get
Joe Lunardi in there. Like, he's bracketology for this stuff, and we'll knock it out. Like, yeah, I don't understand.
Should do it at like 3 a.m. and make people like the Olympics stay up for it. Like you're watching Tottenham Hotspur, in a really good match. You got to stay up late. Everyone's like, who's staying up? Let's go.
Yeah. They're at weird pubs with scarves on, Minari scarves.
Just a weird crowd always hanging out online at 3 in the morning.
I did my ballot for the blog, and I wrote most of it earlier in the week, and I needed to write an intro and find pictures and all that sort of stuff. I did that late last night, and I published it, and I was like, the actual nominations come out in like 3 hours, like from the time why are we doing it this week?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Seems like you could get. It's an easy way to get 30 minutes of ads right into this kind of thing. I don't know.
Just 30 minutes.
Free ideas.
Stretch it out.
Yeah.
Stretch it out.
Look,
college football model.
Seriously. Free ideas. I'm just handing out to
you are, man.
At any point.
Yeah, exactly. They need it. Don't worry. They'll take care of you in the back end. That's what they do.
Well, let's go through the nominations here and give some initial impressions, guys. This might be. First time some of us have read the nominations.
Yeah.
So let's start with original score. It was Defy Bloods, Mank, Minari, News of the World, and Soul. I assume it's going to be Soul or Mank. So Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross win either way.
Yeah.
Like literally, that's what I think. And regardless of who did those, I think those are the two best scores of the year.
John Batiste gets it or not. That's the real... Because he's only on Soul.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
John, he's really hoping it's Soul.
Yeah, root for the late show.
Yeah.
We need the late show. But also, yeah, good to see Mank nominated because I thought that score was very unique.
Yeah. The Five Bloods, too, with the Terrence Blanchard stuff. He always does cool stuff with Spike. It's cool to see that nominated as well.
And for visual effects, we've got Love and Monsters.
Mm.
Big fans of that on the pod.
Yeah.
That movie. Big recommends. The Midnight Sky, the Clooney joint.
Yeah.
And we've got Mulan from the Iger joint.
Did he win best visual effects for Leatherheads too, or is this his first nomination in that?
No, he did for Monuments Men, though.
Yeah, Monuments Men.
Yeah, got it. Yeah. Cool.
Clean sweep at the Oscars.
That laser battle at the end is pretty sick.
It is. When John Goodman decapitates the guy, it's pretty... shocking, but also not shocking.
But still pretty
it's weird.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we've got the one and only Ivan, which I've not seen, and then Tenet. So I believe the way the Academy will think will be Tenet, even though some out there, perhaps some we associate with, will not call Tenet special effects, but rather, I mean visual effects, but rather special effects. But I think Tenet deserves the Oscar because of how groundbreaking the visual or special effects were. But Love and Monsters had some good CG too, so if that wins, that'd be cool.
Yeah, yeah. That's weird category this year, right? Because there's a lot of the... This is usually a category that gets dominated by... this is like your chance to get a nomination if you make a big blockbuster-type movie, and there weren't very many blockbuster movies.
Yeah, so it's true. Good point.
It's an odd one.
Best sound, of course, Greyhound had to be nominated. Of course, Sound of Metal had to get wait, guys, wait, hold on. Stop the presses. Mm-hmm. Guys, get Variety on the line. Have they condensed the sound categories into one?
They did.
Oh, yeah, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is a new day for me.
Bit, honestly.
I cannot believe it. I no longer have to do down. The yeah. thing. The mixing.
Let's still do it. For posterity.
Let's do that but if they were to give sound mixing and editing, here's what, yeah.
Yeah, let's complain right, about so, one aspect of it in this award, no matter who wins.
Which I like that.
I don't know, man. I don't know. The editing on Sound of Metal was great, but the mix, I'm not sure. Just
I would say the opposite. I'd say the mix was perfect.
Oh, I agree. Metal, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Bummer for Sound of Metal, because either way, that's probably winning two Oscars, and now it may only get one.
That's true.
So I assume it will be Sound of Metal because of the what I've talked about. If you want to talk about go back and listen to our top 10. Well, that's just cheap. The way they use the sound. I don't want to go into it here, but highly recommended for the, I don't know, creativity of how they use sound mixing in that movie. So I assume that will take home the Oscar. Then we got makeup and hairstyling, Hillbilly Elegy.
Nominated. What are we doing? Why are we nominating crap movies? Like, just...
Yeah, I know.
I There's don't a care certain
threshold. Yeah.
Because they made Glenn Close, who's a treasure, awful and unbearable. And that takes some makeup.
And she's the best part of the movie.
Yeah, like, I know, man.
Stop giving Oscar nominations to crap movies, even if it's a niche category. It doesn't matter. Just,
yeah.
Should be just I'm a with general, you. Like, okay,
there should
this
be
sucks.
Like a...
I can't do it.
I'm fine if, like, a C+... gets an Oscar nom in a specialty category, but not an F. You know what I mean? Right. There's got to be a threshold.
Totally.
Yeah. No, check Ron Howard's Twitter. He would disagree with you.
That's true.
In fact, a lot of people that he retweets would also disagree with you.
Yeah. Thank you for your support.
Yeah.
Emma also nominated.
Paul Feig said it's the best movie since Answer the Call. So
Emma's nominated because there has to be some kind of Victorian clothes that are nominated every Oscar. So there
for costumes. Yeah.
Yeah. This is makeup, actually. So makeup, it's the same for costumes. It's the same for costumes. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, makeup and hairstyling. Then we have Mank and Pinocchio. There was a Pinocchio movie, apparently, in 2018.
Yeah, another one with Roberto...
Benigni.
Oh, that's right. He just back.
He ran it back. He said, remember that horrible Pinocchio movie I made 20 years ago? I'm going to give it another... I'm going to circle back.
He's
man.
Like... And now he's, what if he just shows the Oscars middle fingers up, like, makeup and hairstyling, yo!
Yeah, I hope he wins that. He's not even nominated, but like Pinocchio wins for that, and he comes out of nowhere and walks across all the chairs again like he did that
exactly.
one year.
Exactly. Yes. I want him to show up at the Oscars again, somehow. Best editing.
I'm going to bring, if I ever win, my two bits, if I'm ever famous, is one, I'm going to steal Martin Short's thing where he comes out and acts like he's surprised to see an audience. And the second thing is, if I ever win awards, I'm only going to accept them as Roberto Benigni would and walk across the entire chair section. That's a real...
Life is beautiful.
Just, but really you. Calmly do it, I too. Act like I just don't see the pathway, the little walkway up. I'm just going to act confused and then just start, especially at the Golden Globes because it's tables. So I'm just going to kind of bullfrog table to table, just crashing into stuff until I can get to the stage. It's going to be my bit. It'll be a one show bit.
I will love that bit. Yeah. You'll go down in history for sure. Best editing. We have The Father, Nomadland, Promising Young
I like
Woman.
That pronunciation. Yeah.
Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago Seven. This one's tough, man. I'd probably give it to Promising Young Woman. What about you guys? Anything stick out as a
I don't know. I haven't really thought about the winners yet. I'm just kind of trying to think what
Nomadland or Promising Young Woman is what I would give it to. But
I'm still in like what should and shouldn't have been nominated mode. And a couple over the next couple weeks, I'll lock in on my winners. But I don't really have thoughts on too many of these yet.
All right, we've got cinematography next, and that's Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, News of the World, Nomadland, and Trial of the Chicago Seven. I think it'll be Nomadland or Mank.
Okay.
Judas and the Black Messiah was incredibly well shot, so I'm very glad to see that was included. I thought that movie was going to be completely shunned, and we can get to that later, but it's great to see that critics and the Academy got around to that one in time.
You know what? You want to hear one of my dumbest movie takes, and I don't even intellectually agree with this, but I feel it to be true. Is that I don't like when black and white movies are nominated for cinematography. It feels like a different thing. I love that Mank was in black and white, and I love the look of it, and I think it was pretty, but it like seems like you're playing a different sport almost. Then I don't know why I think that. I just, in my soul, I do.
It's the way that they were able to kind of replicate the way Orson Welles did. And it's the whole, I predicted this on the pod. When we talked about Mank, I said the Academy is going to freaking love Mank.
Oh, yeah.
I'm predicting it right now. It's going to get every nomination it can because of what it represents and the achievement that it is. Whether it's a quote-unquote good movie or not, I think the people at large will understand like what it took to do that. And, you know,
for sure,
there's a lot of stuff. Netflix just released a little 30-minute behind-the-scenes of Mank. I suggest the listener should go YouTube that. But the care that he put into kind of how they shot it and trying to get the lenses correct and lighting all perfect, you know, that the attention to detail on that side of things, I think is worthy of some praise. So like to me, I don't know. Trial of Chicago 7 for cinematography. Really, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty weak.
I think. All the movies in 2020, Borat was a better shot than that movie. I'm sorry. Like, that's not even the best, most well-shot Sacha Baron Cohen movie of 2020. So
his little bit on
it's not gonna win.
Kimmel
it's
was like, better shot just, than that from his laptop.
I guess the Academy loves Trial of the Chicago 7, but like,
yeah.
If we're trying to push the medium forward, that's not the one I'm showing in film class to my cinematography students, guys. Look at this. Look at this, guys. You know,
big Green Book energy.
It's just Aaron Sorkin is so kind of by the books when he directs movies, and that's not a bad thing. He has a priority, and that's the script and the performances, and that's fine. But don't nominate it for best cinematography and hold it up on this pedestal. I don't understand that, but like, it's offensive to like actually well shot movies from the past year. But it doesn't have a chance.
I'd love to see him with a more, you know. Fenden, no offense to Fenden Papa Mikkel, but you know, more of who does a lot of James Mangold movies, who also is kind of a like very, very good, but very basic's not the right word, but very, you know, traditional director. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see Sorkin because he is so script and actor focused. It's fine if he still wants to direct and set the scenes and everything, but like work with a really out of the box cinematographer would be, I think, an interesting way to use him if he's going to keep directing.
Yeah, that's enough. I mean, Minari.
Yes.
Incredibly well shot.
Yeah.
That one stands out to me as a snub almost there. It's Tenet.
Sonic the Hedgehog. I mean, they shot it twice pretty much with the
Honest Thief with Liam Neeson.
Dude, don't even get me started. The Neeson bias, anti-Neeson bias is absurd.
Man, I forgot about Honest Thief. I haven't seen that one yet. I need to.
Oh, man,
I gotta catch up on that and The Marksman and get.
I haven't seen Marksman yet. I've seen Honest Thief. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want the plot, Brian.
Oh yeah, of course. Can you do that here? I don't know.
He's a thief who's
honest.
Is honest. Yeah.
Ah.
That pretty much sets it up.
Complex. Yeah. So there's this big juxtaposition the whole time. Right. So that's kind of why you buy in. Costume design, we teased it
just
earlier.
Just Liar Liar, but with Liam Neeson.
I would watch
he
that.
He very dryly is like saying Jim Carrey lines.
I never tell a lie,
ever.
Yeah, if we're going to do remakes, let's just do remakes of movies, but just like change one thing about them. How about that? Same movie, but instead of Jim Carrey, it's Liam Neeson in the role.
Super intense.
Carrie and Lloyd. Everything else about the movie is the exact same. We're just going to CG in this guy. Yeah.
I've been pitching RoboCop with Michael Cera for years.
I think we're onto something there, guys. Just completely remove one person and add somebody else in. It's a lot cheaper than remaking it.
Yeah.
It's got what you like about the old one with some new. Let's go for it. All right. Costume design. We did tease it. Emma, of course, nominated for costume design. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Mank, Mulan, and Pinocchio. So another chance for Roberto Benigni to jump on stage.
This Pinocchio thing is wild.
We have to. What's the parlay on MGM right now on the Roberto Benigni winning?
We have to make that
happen. Let's change the odds. Production design. News of the World. Tenet. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Mank, and The Father. I think it'll be Mank. What about you guys?
Yeah, that seems like a pretty maybe Ma Rainey's. That's got
that doesn't stand out to me just because like it's so simple.
Yeah, I did not love that movie. I liked that movie quite a bit less than
I really enjoyed it
than the Academy did. But I thought the design on it was pretty interesting. I always struggle with movies. I said this in my old blog. I struggle with movies that are based on plays that feel like plays, and that is like the
for sure
maybe the most egregious example of that in recent memory. It's just like this is a play. This is not a movie. And
it's like a period.
Yeah, if we're gonna nominate that, let's just nominate Hamilton.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like, yeah, it's definitely a period piece, and that takes a lot of work production design wise. So I can see why it got that, but I think Mank will win that. I can see that. Tenet may be the underdog, or be the 1A there in terms of the favorite. Animated feature, we have Onward, Over the Moon, Shaun the Sheep, Farmageddon, Soul, and Wolfwalkers. I guess Sonic was disqualified because it's half live action. Is that what's going on here?
Bias.
Or I haven't scrolled up to the best pick nominees yet, so there's still a chance. But I get it's going to be Soul, probably,
Banner or Onward. I would say, I mean, Wolfwalkers.
Farmageddon's got a chance, though, I've heard. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, somebody in our Discord was like, I feel like if the name of your movie is Farmageddon, you can't be nominated for an Oscar. And I kind of
that's weird because Michael Bay's planning a sequel to Armageddon called Farmageddon, and I've heard good things.
Can't wait.
All right. What about, so you think, yeah, that one's going to be Soul. Adapted screenplay was Borat, which is interesting. It's adapted, maybe from previous characters or something.
Yeah, I think it's because it's an existing character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's also weird that 90% of that movie is improv. I know,
but there's always like 49 writers on it too.
I get it. There's another side recommend, they do this Actors on Actors thing. He talked with Ben Affleck, which is a great conversation with Affleck and Sacha Baron Cohen talking. But Affleck basically interviews him about like how much of it was scripted versus how much of it was improv. And he said that like they had a script. Like they basically went into the movie with a script, which I didn't even think what they did. So that surprised me. So there it is. Nominated for an Oscar, adapted screenplay. Also, The Father, Nomadland, One Night in Miami, and The White Tiger. This is a tough category.
Yeah.
The Father?
You know, I think I haven't seen The Father yet. So that's like the one that's probably the one movie that I've really got to catch up on before Oscar night. Of those, I think Nomadland has the best script, but
yeah, I do too.
See, that one to me also strikes me as a half improv, half more or less.
Yeah,
so that one's tough for me.
It's really naturalistic.
It's like all those people in it are just,
that's normally
Fran has to hit her notes, and there's characters throughout, but like, you know, Chloe will tell you a lot of it is just on the fly, you know?
Yeah. And real people that they work in their stories with as they film. Yeah. It's funny that adapted screenplay often, because of the world we lived in is the more loaded of the two categories.
Well, it was a book. So yeah. Nomadland was.
No, yeah, totally. I'm just saying it's normally the adapted is more of a loaded you know, traditional screenplay category, the showy screenplays. You know, you think a lot of times they're adapted from big books and things like that.
True.
This year, I would say a lot of it, the more traditional writing is done on the original screenplay. Mm-hmm. They seem like more screenplay type films.
How pissed was Ron Howard when Hillbilly Elegy wasn't nominated? He grabbed the screenplay and chunked it across the room. He's like, no! Because you knew he read that and was like, oh, this is easy. Easy adapted screenplay.
Not on the nose at all, yeah.
Yeah. Nope. All right. Original screenplay, Judas and the Black Messiah, Minari, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and Trial of the Chicago 7. I think it'll be Trial of the Chicago 7 because it's Aaron Sorkin and he's nominated. It's like if Tarantino's nominated for screenwriting, he's going to get the award, no matter if he wins directing or best picture or anything. It's just kind of a... Mm-hmm. The way it is. So I would say that's the favorite. I would love to see A Promising Young Woman win Best Original Screenplay just because I think it's such an original screenplay. Also, Judas and the Black Messiah, I think, was extremely strong screenplay. So those are my top three there. What about you guys?
I like those. I mean, I think Trial... I mean, if Sorkin writes a script and the movie is competent, I feel like that's... probably likely to win, and that got my vote for whatever that's worth. I think it's a promising young woman.
I could see with a surprise win there. I mean, that one was one where that's like I said, that's so much more of a loaded category in terms of what you see when you see the screenplay on screen. Mm-hmm. And so, I wouldn't surprise me really if any of these five won. I'll be interested to see the odds and everything and the momentum as we go in.
Yeah, and I need to read
on that for sure. Like, even a lot of movies, like in mine, I think Soul was a really great screenplay. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, animated movies never get any due outside of their category, so it is what it is. Even like Palm Springs, I think was a really good script as well. Like, took a trope that we've seen done a million times and kind of brought some new life to it and just made it a lot of fun in different ways and stuff. So
Mank,
even like Defy Bloods and
Mank didn't get nominated in either category.
Yeah.
Doolittle original. Mank was so good.
Obviously. It's good year in that department.
Yeah, man. I'm gonna have to go back and read the script for Promising Young Woman, like the screenplay. Cause I wonder how it reads on the page, you know, and I wonder the detail that she puts in there. And just her writing style, because you know how Sorkin writes, and that's people are going to love that. But I'm interested to see like how the voters will read and how they'll vote, because that could swing it, and just how detailed she is with her prose and her writing in the screenplay. So, supporting actress, we move to Maria Bakalova from Borat.
I'm glad she got nominated, man. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
She was great.
Yeah, she was. Yoo Jung-yoon from Minari, Amanda Seyfried from Mank, Olivia Colman. It's like kind of getting a Meryl at this point with Olivia Colman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just, she does something. It's gonna be good. She's going to get nominated. She's in The Father. And then we have Glenn Close from Hillbilly Elegy.
So she got supporting actress, both Oscar and Razzie noms today. Yeah. Has that ever been done before?
I saw that I tried to look this up before the show because I saw she received for the same movie.
Yeah.
And I saw like 10 other people who have gotten it in the same year.
Yeah. Like Eddie Murphy had Dreamgirls, Oscar, and Norbit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sandra Bullock had The Blind Side and that All About Steve, like at the same time. And the Eddie Redmayne thing was the same. But I've never seen it for the same movie. Like the same performance being nominated for an Oscar and a Razzie. I've never seen that.
If it has, please
tweet us.
If Glenn Close does a movie, she gets a nomination. That's kind of a rule I have. And I think it's normally fair, you know, even though she's never won, that's always feels, you can feel good about nominating Glenn Close, man. This really tests it. She does the best she can do in that movie. She's the best part of it. But man, that movie's, fact that's going to have, it makes me less mad though, because Glenn Close is just awesome. And it just adds to her legacy of nominations. It will make me mad if she wins because the movie's terrible. But, if this was Hillbilly Elegy's only nomination, it would make me more mad because I'd be like, great. Now that's always going to be an Oscar-nominated film, but the fact it was nominated for something else is makes this a little more palatable, I guess, but yikes.
Yeah, I agree. I think the favorite in that category, whew, That's a tough one.
Siegfried.
Siegfried, right? or Olivia Colman. You got to.
Yeah. Her. Maybe. Yeah, she's always a threat. But yeah. That movie hasn't really. I haven't really heard that one in the zeitgeist as much. I'm super hyped about it because I love mm-hmm. both of them. But yeah. Yeah.
I think I would go Yoon Jung Yoo.
I would too. I'm just trying to think who.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. I think Jodie Foster got kind of messed over on this category too. I thought the Mauritanian is not very good. I didn't know. I thought that movie was very paint by numbers and kind of cringe, but yeah. She was really good in it. Like it was a sort of a throwback Jodie Foster performance.
Yeah, her over Glenn Close, I would be fine with.
Yeah. And Dominique Fishback too, from Judas and the Black Messiah. I thought she was great.
Agreed.
All right. Supporting actor. Speaking of Judas and the Black Messiah, we've got two actors in the same category from that film. First, Daniel Kaluuya nominated, as well as Lakeith Stanfield. And then we've got Sacha Baron Cohen for Trial of the Chicago 7, Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami, and Paul Raci from Sound of Metal. And I will say, I love Lakeith, and he's, you know, a top five guy that I look forward to watching. But I would have probably narrowed it down to one for that movie to represent this category, and it would have given it to Kaluuya. That's just me.
The weird thing about that, too. As good as he was in that movie. Yeah, the weird thing about that is that he was considered a lead character, like a best actor performer. That's where they were running him as, and I think that's where his other nominations and such have or potential nominations. But apparently the acting guild can choose what they want to do regardless of what
they can write in.
Yeah, I mean they can just say he's a supporting hero. So it's like I'm glad that he got nominated. I probably would have had him in my five for this if I'd known that he was eligible for that, because every like award tracker had him at listed as leading performer, and I didn't think he quite could crack that.
I think that's fine if you're like an Anthony Hopkins type, and in Silence of the Lambs, and you're maybe only in it 10 minutes and you can kind of choose, right? If you can point to another lead in the movie and say, I'm supporting then, right? Mm-hmm. But when the movie is called Judas and the Black Messiah, and both Judas and the Black Messiah are the supporting actors, you can't point to me anyone else that's the lead.
That's a great point. They're so even throughout, though. It's tough.
Right. I know. And I get that. And that's tough, but like there's got to be a third person that you say is the lead then in any, if you're going to do that, in my opinion. I know that's not on them. I'm not
you're saying
them.
That the movie doesn't have a lead when you
it screws over both Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield out of a potential best actor nomination. Like neither of them were nominated for best actor, instead both supporting actor. And if one of them wins, like if Kaluuya wins, he's gonna have to beat Lakeith. If Lakeith wins, he's gonna beat Kaluuya. So it's like, that sucks, man.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it them in the same category rules out. It hurts their chances of winning. I think one of them can still win, but you know they may not get nominated. You know they do that on the guild submits on purpose because they want you want different stuff to get nominated. So maybe they didn't think they would get nominated in Best Actor or have as good a shot at winning. You know, so they choose it to win. But yeah, it is a bummer they're gonna maybe split some vote, but it's that category is always the most loaded because that's short male roles or what Hollywood loves writing a lot of historically, and it's always some of the best. And this is a pretty weak one by comparison, I would say. I mean they're both great, but like Sacha Baron Cohen's better in Borat, and Leslie Odom's good, but I don't know if that's a supporting, you know, in a super loaded year, if that's nominated. So it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with Sacha Baron Cohen is like, I don't know how to pick between all of them, because there's like 14 supporting characters in that movie, and they're all good. Cause they're all really good actors. When you get
Franklin Jones, the freaking judge.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I mean, they all did a great job. Like to me, it was kind of like, this should win best ensemble. And I can't really tell you that Sacha Baron Cohen is more important to this movie or gave a better performance than Mark Rylance or even like Michael Keaton or let alone, you know, Frank Langella or Yaya or any of these guys. So I don't know. I think Daniel Kaluuya was the best performance I saw this year, like across all of the award tiers.
I hope he wins, man.
I've got to believe he's coming away with this, but
I love Sacha Baron Cohen. I love when comedians are represented in this kind of stuff just because of my sensibility. But like, if they split the vote and he wins, I'll be super annoyed.
Yeah, that would suck. Yeah,
totally. I'll be thrilled in 20 years and be like, man, Cohen has an Oscar. That's awesome. Like, you know what I mean? But I will hate in the circumstance of which it came.
Mm-hmm. All right. Best actress, Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Andrew Day.
She's put a nice little career together, Viola Davis, man. She's like in this every year.
She's the best. She's a queen. Great.
Andrew Day for United States versus Billie Holiday. Vanessa Kirby, Pieces of a Woman. Mm-hmm. Frances McDormand for Nomadland. And Carrie Mulligan,
every time it's funny.
Promising Young Woman. I think it's going to be Carrie or Frances.
Yeah,
with a outside Andrew Day chance. What about you guys?
Yeah, that movie is pretty rough, though.
Yeah, not good
compared to the other movies. Mm-hmm. It's she's great. I mean, she does a good job. It's the classic kind of biopic-y role.
That's we're coming off a year where
I know
where Renee won.
Yeah, it's true.
I forgot about that. Ugh.
And it was just saying, like
don't rule out a biopic. Totally. Like,
and that was more the category around it, but too, because she didn't have as I don't think a stiff a competition, but that was the weirdest
one. She did sweep like that awards season.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not only did she win, it was like foregone in September.
Yeah,
was it really
so weird?
Andrew Day won the Golden Globe too, so she might have some momentum. But it's going to be Frances or Carrie Mulligan. If it's either anyone else,
she got musical or comedy glove though, so she wasn't up against a lot of these.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yuri Han got, I think, a little bit snubbed on this.
Yeah,
one. I don't know. I love Minari, so that's part of it. But I thought she was.
Did you see Pieces of a Woman, Brian?
I did, and I thought Vanessa Kirby was very good. She would have been sixth or seventh on my
list. Okay, cool. I was just curious how you. So, I figured that's who you would take.
Yeah, same with Viola Davis. I again didn't love that movie. Not super sure that either Viola Davis or Chadwick Boseman should qualify as the leads. I don't know. It was a strange thing for me. So, but anyway, I had them as like six and seven on my list with Yuri Han, and I put Elizabeth Moss in for Invisible Man. I still can't shake how stinking good that movie was, and how
she'll have a run of a few, I would think.
Yeah, for sure.
She's
for
doing
sure.
pretty cool stuff. And what's cool about Elizabeth Moss is it doesn't seem like she's really Oscar hunting. If she ever decides to, she can put together like five straight noms
for sure
because she's great. Yeah.
So let's go on to Best Actor. We got Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal, Chadwick Boseman, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Anthony Hopkins, The Father, Gary Oldman in Mank, and Steven Yeun from Minari.
Loving just the quiet Hopkins essence. Loving it. Yeah. It's like he's two noms in like 3 years, which is awesome, but like very quietly. It's not like the full. Just kind of, it's very of his, you know, he's such a gentle, lovely man. It's awesome. He's just kind of in his 80s, just cranking them out still.
So here's, I think they probably got this right. This is one category like, yeah, that's probably what I would have thought it would have been. But
yeah, if you're moving Kaluuya and Stanfield, then yeah, for sure.
Yes, if Kaluuya or Stanfield aren't in this category. But and we're not going to give Borat a Best Actor nomination. Guys, come on. Like, he freaking lived with people for 5 days and convinced them that he was Borat.
I know. I always say that. I say it in the first one, too.
5 days in a house with two dudes that he didn't know. And he was at, his life was at risk the whole time. Like, That's not acting? Like, I don't.
I know. I remember there was the.
That's frustrating, man. Maybe our last chance to nominate Borat for an Oscar. And
yeah.
I mean, it's going to get in other categories, whatever. But like, Sacha Baron Cohen being nominated for Trial of the Chicago 7, right? Really? That's going to be his Oscar nomination? Like, okay.
Bummer.
Like,
better than Bruno, I guess. No, reminds me of this comedian I saw years ago, and pardon me, I can't think of his name, but he's a local guy who's opening for a comic. I think I was seeing like Nikki Glaser or something, and he was opening, and he was like, It's so funny, these Oscar awards. You see these guys, you know, all nominated for best actor, and I'm going, that's not the best actor. The best actor is a guy who has a secret family 3 miles down the road, and every day he looks at his wife and kids, and they have no idea that he has a whole nother wife and kids. That guy's the best actor.
Yeah. That's Seinfeld's bit of like, why are we awarding these people? Like, you said it better than him. You win. Like, it's the whole thing is dumb. Yeah. Like,
the best bit on acting is Spade has one on his stand up where he goes, he has several examples, but he goes, everyone acts like acting is hard. It's easy. Let me talk about this. He was like, he talks about, oh, what's her name? She won for Dreamgirls. Jennifer Hudson. He's like, Jennifer Hudson couldn't even finish top 7 on American Idol. Not even top 7 of her season. Does one movie, first movie, wins an Oscar.
Yep.
That's how easy.
Exactly.
It's a great bit.
That's good. That's good.
Great point. All right.
Yeah, I think there's a big one though here, and that's it. Really, it's the whole movie. It's I guess the Academy didn't see The Five Bloods, I guess.
That's
how it plays out. Like, I thought Delroy Lindo had the best performance of the year for a lead, and he's not.
Yeah.
And I'm not surprised, because you could kind of see that that's where things were.
And release hurts that, man.
Yeah.
It's like, it's awesome when you get a good awardsy movie in June, but the risk is that these olds just don't remember.
Right. They don't think about it at all.
Yeah.
I thought Delroy Lindo was so, so good in that, and it's I'm bummed that he's not. Because a guy like, I mean, how many lead roles does he have? You know, and that's that. You shouldn't factor that into your decision making if you're gonna, you know, pick your top 5 actors for or lead performances or whatever. But I can lament it now. You know, like, man, there's maybe never gonna be a time where he is the lead in a movie that.
Yeah, you look at it this way: he may never have another chance to be nominated for an Oscar for best actor, and Anthony Hopkins got at least 6 or 7 more. Chances.
Exactly.
Well into his late 90s, he's just gonna be hammering these out, you know, so you could skip him this year. It's fine
for sure.
That's
for
true. I think this
When y'all watched what's the movie called, I'm sorry, Ma Rainey's, did you feel like anybody was the lead? Did you feel like Chadwick Boseman was the lead in that movie? I watched that movie and I was like, not my favorite movie, but man, a couple of great performances in there. Obviously, Chadwick was just fantastic in that. But it wasn't until like a month later when I was like kind of looking through the predictions and the models and everything of what, are, and I was like, wait, I assumed that he would be up for supporting actor. I did not.
Yeah, I think it comes down more, Brian, to top billed cast in a movie, you know, and that movie going in was starring Chadwick Boseman and Viola Davis, right? Mm-hmm. Even though,
again, when it says Ma Rainey in it,
right,
title, and she's Ma Rainey.
Even though, like, he might not have a big role, like, he was the face of the movie. So I think that's more probably why. But I agree with you. Yeah, it didn't stand out like a leading role, but it did stand out like an incredible performance.
Yeah, he was great. He's great in the movie, so I have no qualms about him being nominated.
Sentimentally,
he's going to win. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's his to lose, for sure.
I'm totally with that. I thought when I watched that movie, I was like, that's clearly your leader in the clubhouse for, you know, best supporting actor. And then it was just surprising to me to see.
Yeah, I could see it either way. I could have seen it either way. Best director. We have Lee Isaac Chung for Minari, Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman, David Fincher for Mank, Chloe Zhao, Nomadland, and Thomas Vinterberg for Another Round.
A little surprising on that one.
Yeah,
I've seen that movie.
He's not going to win.
That's the one I got to knock out as well.
It's apparently a great movie, but I have not seen that one. I'll shout out to the Rank Kings who enjoyed that one.
Well, I mean, it is a Swedish comedy, and they're
pretty into
those. Hilarious. Yeah. They're known. No, I hope it's awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
No, I love, who is it, Mads Mikkelsen?
Yeah.
In it. I love me some Mads.
Yeah, I'm a big
that came a little
Lars Ranth fan, so Ranth Nation, stand up.
Very excited to see Emerald Fennell get Best Director, because like I said on the episode, she directed the hell out of that movie.
Yeah,
I mean, holy crap. So that is, if that hadn't happened, that probably would have been my biggest snub of the year if she hadn't been nominated for Best Director. I guess I thought she absolutely slayed that. And then Chloe Zhao also nominated. So this is the first time two women have been nominated for Best Director.
And what were you saying, Brian? You said something like, it was like, hopefully the last? something like that. Mm-hmm. Did I quote you right? Good. Right. Okay, good.
Hopefully, yeah, hopefully next year it's like the Grammys and
supposed to keep best that rock the album air, is, okay.
Yeah. Best rock album is all
have you women. Ever,
I'll take that.
Brian, have you ever heard that Fred Armisen bit he used to do in writer's pitches where he would accuse other people of awful pitches? Yes, he used to do where he'd be like, I don't know. And he was always calling to us. Colin was saying something. We should do something about that school shooting last week. I don't think it's funny, but he.
That is a good bit. He was very forceful about it. Yeah.
When they're doing the
I don't know. I just want to throw it out there.
Yeah. I thought it was horrible, but this is what he wanted to do. I was just saying, yeah.
So everyone knows that was a joke. Best, Brian did not say hopefully the last. Too, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just make him so uncomfortable. I don't know. I thought it was too soon, but like, I don't.
So great. I think Chloe wins because I just think this is the year of Chloe and her star is rising now, and this is it for her. But
she's got that Marvel piece behind her too, the Disney piece. Don't factor in terms of campaign because they would love to say Oscar very winner at right. the next. Mm-hmm.
That's true. And so I think that she'll win. She's won everything so far, like every award that can be given. She's won so far. Yeah.
And deservedly so. I mean, that's a beautifully well-made film.
So I'll write that in as a guaranteed, but the upset could be David Fincher, because it's David Fincher. And it's Mank. So.
Yeah, that's true. It's a showier piece as well. So that's part of it. I thought Regina King probably should have gotten one here too. Maybe Spike Lee as well. I had Fennell as like number six on my list. But it was a... I think this category is super stacked this year for all of the faults of the 2020 movie year. There were seven or eight, I think, really, really good directorial efforts this year that were pretty easy to spot too, of like, man, that's great. That's great work from the director's side of things. So it's a tough category. It's stacked this year.
Yeah, it is very stacked. So y'all think Chloe's going to win?
Yeah, I do. I think she has the buzz. I think she has the momentum moving her direction. Now, I mean, it's six more weeks until the ceremony happens.
Yeah, and stuff, I mean, so. We should say any of these people could get me to three, four times.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had. I mean, there's an inevitable because there's such a distance between. It's every year. It's not just this year, because there's such distance between the nominations and the actual ceremony or the actual voting. There's so much time for narratives to get out there, and
if Chloe Zhao gets me too in the next 6 weeks, I'll be very surprised.
I know, it's like you never. I mean, it just what's going to happen? You know, it's all. Gosh,
you know what, man? I mean, whatever you got to do to make it safe and stuff. We saw the Grammys had the people there. Yeah, quick tangent. You guys, it's a hot take of mine. Hey, you know, feel free to put pretty famous people in the front of your award show and not first responders. Let's all take the first responders to $1,000 dinners and we all love them and thank them and that's all great. But not really, doesn't really help an award show to have a bunch of like EMTs wearing masks just kind of sitting there confused. Mm-hmm. So, a hot take of mine. But at the
Oscars,
you hate
first responders though.
I love first responders, but I can tell they don't care about seeing Amy Poehler give trophies out. Just give me a gift card.
Just donate money. Yeah.
Put famous people in this thing, the fake laugh, because I don't do this.
Right. That'd be great.
So anyway, that was my, the Grammys was so much better because it would like pan to Dua Lipa and I'd way rather see Dua Lipa's reaction than, you know, some like EMT from Columbus.
I hope the Oscar group, that's what they're called, I think.
Yeah.
The does the Oscars. The Oscars group.
It's just Bruce Valanche. It's just him.
Yeah. I hope Bruce Valanche was paying a lot of attention to the Grammys, because I don't give a crap about the Grammys. I usually don't even watch.
It was good this year. I mean, the jokes were bad because that one guy writes them all, but David Wilde or whatever. Yeah. But the show was great, I thought. Yeah,
I really enjoyed the Grammys. It was fun.
Yeah. And the performances and the way, how it would, I was kind of blown away. I thought they did it very, very well. So I hope the Oscars figure that out.
Anyway, to finish that point, man, I want to see, for two reasons, I want to see celebrities at these Oscars, because if you're not going to have them there, and that's fine, if that's the safe decision you make or whatever, it needs to be tomorrow then. Send everyone a Zoom link, because if they're not going to be there and don't have to get ready and travel and stuff, why are we waiting 6 weeks? If they're all going to be on Zoom, let's fire this thing up Sunday and get this over with. Otherwise, it's stupid. So that's my hot take.
Totally agree.
That's great. Another good point. All right, we move to the final category, Best Picture. The nominees this year, it looks like there were eight of them. It's The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal,
the rest of the year,
and Trial of Chicago 7. Once again, no Borat, no Defy Bloods.
Yeah, the Five Bloods is
no Soul too. I thought Soul was my biggest snub for this category too. Soul could have been the movie of the year.
Of all years, man, we're half. You know, that's one of the few. Yeah, seriously, you know, it's a bummer. And you know, they get. I understand these sort of. They get their free Oscar with the animation category, so it kind of balances out. But it would be nice. It would be nice.
We've nominated animated movies before. We nominated Joker for Best Picture. I'm sorry, but Avatar was nominated for Best Picture. Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture, and that was like 30 years ago. So like we've done this. We can do this, guys. We can appreciate animation as cinema now. We can throw it into that category and everything will be fine. Yeah, Toy Story 3, I think, was nominated for Best Picture, maybe. But
and Soul's as good as that. And this is a weaker year probably than that year just because of the stuff that came out. But as you guys know, if I'm saying this, I don't even like animation. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, obviously, Soul's one of the best 10 movies of the year.
There you go. That's all you got to say. Yeah.
If I'm saying it, trust me.
So, yeah, no, it's just frustrating when there are like, all right, 8 movies instead of 10. When there's clearly like 10 worthy movies. Even in 2020,
you only get the number of nominees that get the requisite votes and stuff. Just make it 10. Just make it 10. This is not
the top,
that hard.
Here's the top
just make
10. 10 That's
movies.
It. Yep.
Just, my gosh. Like, it's just so stupid. So stupid to draw a line.
But hey,
at 8,
but
or
what
maybe
if
7,
some years, what if some years it's not a good year then, Brian? And something gets nominated, doesn't deserve it. You're like,
Suicide Squad has multiple Oscar wins. Yeah, exactly. So, like, it doesn't matter. Just, make it 10 movies and move on. Mm-hmm. So dumb.
Glenn Close, 0 Oscars. Suicide Squad, several. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
So I think the favorite is Nomadland, but I would put Mank as second on the list. But I don't know. Trial of Chicago 7. They seem to love that one too. That could be the Green Book.
I could see Chloe winning for Nomadland. I got to work that into my thing. And Mank getting, like, splitting the vote on it. Mm-hmm.
Minari will play well on screeners too, and that I mean, everything's on screeners this year, so I get it. But that will, I think, I would guess that the profile of Minari will go up a little bit versus some of the others. Maybe it will come down a tad bit over the next.
I'm surprised The Father got nominated. Not that it's not deserving. It just seemed like that was that movie every year that like gets the two acting awards and then nothing else nominations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And maybe a screenplay. Yeah. I was surprised it got a Best Picture nom, but cool.
Yeah, so there you go. I think we're all on board with Nomadland being the favorite, but you just don't.
It's actually Nomadland. I'm sorry to correct. Yeah.
Being the favorite.
Nomadland. It's the play.
I love Nomadland, by the way. Went there last week.
Me too.
Excellent lunch. Nice little good lunch. Nomadland. Big fan. All right. Guys, before we get out of here, let's do our patented weekly recommends.
Bam, bam.
Weekly recommends.
All right, I'm going to start it off.
Do it.
It's been something I've had on the background as I've been working and during the day, kind of, you know, when I'm not actually doing work, having on in the background and, you know, kind of winding down my day. I've been going back and I've been trying to, I don't know how many times I've tried this, but I'm actually doing it this time, guys. Going back and watching The Simpsons.
Oh, nice.
And I'm at like season 7 now, I think, from the beginning. And there were some nights where I was laughing so hard that my wife like had to come in the next room and be like, what the hell is wrong with you? I'm like, it's The Simpsons. I'm sorry. Like, I was listening to my AirPods because she couldn't hear like what was going on. Or I'm just sitting there cackling in the living room in silence. You know, what is going on? And I mean,
I do that too, but there's no TV.
Some of that writing on those early Simpsons episodes is just
incredible.
Oh my God. I forgot how funny it was, to be honest. And I grew up on The Simpsons. It's a top 5 show for me. I forgot how funny it was, to be honest with you. It's funnier than I even remember it being. And so I'm working my way through that. check in with me later this year as I'm on season 32, which is the current season. And I would say I've probably only seen 10 seasons, the first 10. So okay. I've got a good 22 seasons to catch up on here. Oh, I've seen sporadic episodes, but not every single one. So that's something I'm doing. And I want to recommend The Simpsons because it's freaking hilarious. And it's on the Disney Plus, and everyone kind of has access to it now. And I don't know, maybe young kids aren't into it or haven't done it. But man, great show. So funny. Simpsons. That's my recommend.
Awesome.
Nice.
What you got, Brian?
I've seen almost every episode of the first 15 seasons of The Simpsons, I'd guess. Okay. 12 to 15, somewhere in that range. And then very, very few of the next 15-plus seasons. But I'm with you, Kent. Like, I've started doing that a couple times. It's just such a daunting task. It's so many episodes, and it's tough. But man, that show... I don't know if younger generations understand how... And I don't mean this. I don't mean that as like old man take, like a Clint Eastwood sort of thing. But like, just the importance of that show.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if younger generations can grasp how incredibly valuable that show is to like all of TV. From if you've enjoyed a peak TV show, there's a good chance you have The Simpsons to thank for at least a small part of that. It's so big. Such
yeah, over 600 episodes. I mean. Good grief.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. Man, so crazy.
Yeah, that's my recommend. What you got, Brian?
I'm going to recommend a book. I recommended a podcast with this author, I don't know, 6 weeks ago or something like that. But I promised that I was going to reread the book, and it would come up in a weekly recommend. So here it is. It's Into the Wild, John Krakauer.
Great
25th
one.
Anniversary this year of the book. I think probably my favorite nonfiction book of all time. And I did the audiobook this time. Hadn't done that previously. It's probably been 5 or 10 years since I've read the book, and did the audiobook this time and really enjoyed it. I love Krakauer's writing. I just think he's such a brilliant writer and does such a good job of interweaving his own stories and ideas and stuff into the narrative of the, the main story of the book, but without it taking away from the story of Chris McCandless and stuff. I also think that book does a great job, and I don't know, Richard, I'm sure you've read this book. I don't know I think that book does such a great job of showing or telling Chris McCandless's story without trying to make him out to be either a martyr or an idiot.
Yeah.
It just kind of leaves that up to you to decide. And I think Krakauer's probably taken a side on that since the book came out over the last 25 years. But I don't think that is presented in the book so much. It kind of lets you decide, do you think this guy is a complete idiot or is he, your hero or maybe somewhere in between. But I think it does such a fantastic job of that. And great book. One of my favorites. And it was good to read it in audio format this time around.
Ah, I love that.
Have
book.
You done Under the Banner of Heaven or any other ones, Brian? Yeah,
I think nice. I've read every crack. You know what? That's not true. There was one that popped up on my Audible a couple days ago based on, having read this book. I don't think I've read that one, but... Under the Banner of Heaven and Into Thin Air.
Yeah.
And
the Missoula one's pretty good,
Missoula
too.
Missoula one, yeah. Yeah, I think he's great. I just got for my birthday, my brother gave me a copy of Krakauer has a new-ish collection of, his writing.
It's like Wilderness and Risk and or something like that.
Yeah. That, I'm hoping to read in the next month or so.
Cool. Let me know how that goes.
What you got, Arby?
Yeah, I've got a book as well. It's actually on movies. I read, I don't know if you remember last year, I think I recommended that Oral History on Mike Nichols. Mm. And there's a new full, like crazy biography of Mike Nichols out as well. And I haven't read that yet by Mark Harris. So I decided to read Mark Harris's last book first. It's Pictures at a Revolution. It's about the 5 Oscar nominees of 1967 and how that really changed. I've decided to do my homework for once on this podcast.
Nice.
The history. Have either of you read that yet?
No, that sounds like something I need to check out.
It's super good. And it's in the 5 movies are like literally like Dr. Doolittle, which was a huge disaster. Mm-hmm. obviously The Graduate, Bonnie and Clyde. And so it's, you know, it's a lot of stuff, and it's great, like Warren Beatty stuff and Francois Truffaut stuff and Mike Nichols. It kind of serves as a good, I'm going to read the Mike Nichols one next and stuff. Mike Nichols, because you know, guys know I love him. So really that kind of as the opening of the next golden era of Hollywood is really those, that 67 Oscars and what that represented to the business of Hollywood going forward. There's a great line in the beginning where Hollywood was upside down because Warren Beatty, who looked like a movie star, had become a producer, and Dustin Hoffman, who looked like a producer, had become a movie star, and really how that changed everything for the next, you know, 20 years. So,
gosh, Bonnie and Clyde is so good. If you guys haven't gone back and rewatched that one,
so different,
is,
man.
It's an excellent movie, and The Graduate is fantastic too. So, and it certainly probably should have won Best Picture, but Bonnie and Clyde, yeah, it's in the, you know, whatever it's called, the, National Film Library Registry. But like, I don't feel like people will give that one enough credit for, I don't know, kind of being influential or.
Oh yeah. It's, yeah. It's funny.
It's the reason Roger Ebert got into film criticism. He saw that movie and was like, that's it. That's just what I want to do. Change everything. It's a great movie, man. And, it's sad when like that movie is like ripped off in different ways. You know, Queen and Slim, for example, you know, it's like just, Bonnie and Clyde exists, guys. Why are we doing this? Anyway,
hey, since this is an Oscar-y episode, can we tease what we're doing at the end of the month?
Go for it.
Doing. So last episode of March, this is a thing we're going to do, I think, maybe every year, hopefully, and maybe more frequently. We'll see. We're trying to fill out some of our weeks instead of reviewing a movie that we all are not enthused about one way or the other. We're going to try to do some more list episodes and things like that. So, the end of the month, last episode will be we're going to revisit the 2012 movie year, so the 2013 Oscars, and do picks for, do our picks now, what is that, 8 years out from when that ceremony took place, for, so we'll do our picks for the big eight categories and talk about the Oscar, and we picked that year, Richard did, really, this was your deal, because that was the first year of MAM. So some of those first episodes of Mad About Movies are the better films of 2012, and so we wanted to look back at what the Oscars look like now through the lens of, you know, 8 years later and whatnot.
Yep, and we'll, if this goes well, we'll continue to do it every year, I think we'll add. So it's kind of got that thing of, you know, through the lens of history, it becomes a little more obvious as to what should have won. So it should be kind of interesting. I'm excited to do it with you guys. I'm noodling around a little bit. We're going to do top eight categories, right, Kent?
Top eight, just like MySpace.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. All right.
It's how I live my life. Check my back, tats.
Hey, I got a lot. I think got a lot to thank MySpace for.
Yep.
So thank you, Tom. Yep. There you go. There's Oscar nominations talk. We'll be revisiting this subject in our patented Oscars postgame show that will be recorded immediately after the Oscars and posted sooner than most MAM episodes are on weekends. So look for that one like late after the Oscars, midnight, something like that. We'll try to get it out there ASAP for you. But we've been doing that every year and we'll continue it. So we probably won't talk about these movies again until then. But we'll move on with 2021, Ryan the Last Dragon talk. And Coming to America, maybe, coming down the pike here, as well as Kong and the Snyder Cut, guys. So, yeah, lots to talk about, and we will be doing that very soon. Thank you for listening. Follow all of us on the socials at Richard Barnett, BGill12, and I'm at Kent Garrison. And don't forget to follow us at Mad About Movies on Twitter and on Instagram, because we're posting a lot of fun stuff there as well. But if you want more episodes, become a VIP. We're talking Ant-Man. We're going through the whole MCU this year. It's going to be a really fun time. We've already done Iron Man. We're doing Ant-Man next. And yeah, that's a really fun time. We've got Office Talk. We've got an AMA with Richard coming up next month. So stay tuned for that. But it's madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP if you want additional episodes and Discord access. So thank you for listening. We love you. We'll see you soon at the cinema. Goodbye.
Okay.